It's time for Valley Edition, a weekly panel discussion on current issues in the Mat-Su Valley, moderated by Mike Malevsky.
Well, folks, once again, it's time for another edition of Valley Edition. And we have on the phone lines, two phone lines, Zaz Hollander. Welcome, Zaz.
Hey, Mike. Good to be here.
And Philip Manning. Welcome, Philip.
Thanks for having me, Mike.
And holding things down here in the studio, we have Mark Kelsey. Hold on tight there, Mark. Welcome, Mark.
Happy Friday, everyone.
Well, I'm going to start with something that I think may affect the people who live in the area around Talkeetna and certainly the rest of the borough, and that's the timber situation, because we've had a number of meetings this week that the borough assembly's been involved with, and it started off on Tuesday with a two-hour meeting that dealt with timber and the port. And how about a quick summary, Zaz?
That's funny, Mike. So I think one of the biggest concerns about what could be a truly great project and partnership is how unwieldy and hard to understand it is because there are so many moving parts. So this is a big timber venture that some assembly members have been working on for up to 2 years in some form. And it starts with a timber sale out Oil Well Road that was first leased in 1998 to Charlie Nash and then became the subject of a lawsuit and then a settlement in 2013. So this sale at the heart of this big partnership emerged from that settlement, which is giving at least some borough officials and members of the public concern. And so the kind of the bare bones is it's a large timber sale. New company, Denali Timber Management, formed by a guy out of Washington State with a long kind of timber management record there with a company called Teven Brothers. They would log about 11,000 acres on this 24,000-acre borough sale. And Nash would be involved in some of it, but Nelly Timber Management would do the logging and then contract trucks, 25 a day, 5 days a week, 24 hours, to take those logs cut up into 8-foot sections to the port, where there would be an 8-acre area, I believe, up on the upland portion of the port, where the logs would be stored for shipment to China by way of a New Zealand company. And so there's just, it's a lot. And so the assembly the assembly has two kind of ordinances before them on this. And one would give Charlie Nash, at least as it's written now, a contract for, it's 15,000 acres of operable timber, but there are only about 11 or 12,000 now that would be logged. 3,150 an acre of over 5 years. And then there's a separate lease for the port that Denali Timber Management would get, which would include exclusive rights to ship logs to the Pacific Rim for 3 years. And so the assembly first put this for introduction a week ago Tuesday during a joint session with the Planning Commission. And then it was up for hearing and potential decision this Tuesday, which was too soon for at least two assembly members, Jim Sykes and McKee, and also some audience members who came to voice their concerns. And maybe Philip has a different perspective, but I mean, I've been tracking the borough first started talking about this late last year, at least to me. But there is already a lot underway. And then John Moosey announced the potential for this partnership, I want to say in January. And I reached out to a few of the players involved, and nobody wanted to go on the record or even have their names in the paper, which was a little curious. And they said at the time it was just things were so preliminary, which they were, and they still are. But there weren't a lot of details available until, you know, a week and a half ago. And it's a big partnership, and, you know, the port is in so much trouble. John Moosey said it's losing, and we all know this, you know, anywhere from $800,000 to $1.5 million a year. And so this, at least under the borough estimates, would bring in nearly $1 million a year just in the port lease side of things and the revenues coming from that. And then the borough estimated another almost $500,000 from the timber purchases, but they miscalculated because they based that number on the 15,000 acre operable number and not the 11 to 12,000 that Denali Timber Management would actually log. So, you know, as always, these are forecasts and not hard numbers, but it's a really big partnership. And I think what the Assembly is hearing and ultimately continued the hearing until the 17th is that there just needs to be more time to really look at all of the different moving parts, to look at Mr. Nash's history with the borough and that sale and lawsuits. Although the hearing was delayed because Ted Leonard, for personal reasons, couldn't be at either a work session or the regular assembly meeting on Tuesday.
Right, right. So the, as you say, the bottom line, they're going to be taking this up on April 17th. Looks like they're going to have a full agenda then. But Philip, perspective from Talkeetna.
Kind of similar to what Zaz mentioned, which is folks up here at the Talkeetna Community Council meeting earlier this week were basically saying, "Wait, you know, it's been in the air for a while, but for the particulars to come out and then for a decision potentially to turn around and be made within a week of the contracts coming out and that sort of thing, folks up here, at least the ones I talked to, just thought it was too soon." Including a Oil Well Road resident who drove down for the meeting on Tuesday and said basically exactly that. You know, it's like, wait, do we know that they've got a good mitigation plan for Oil Well Road with all these trucks going down and that sort of thing? In addition to the particulars of the contract, and again, you know, I heard a couple people voice concern about the history of Charles Nash and the borough and this, you know, particular area for logging and, you know, what sort of assurances are there in that regard, that kind of thing. So I think, and the overwhelming request that I heard was, yeah, just push it off for at least one more meeting to give the public and, frankly, the Assembly time to look at all the particulars. So, yeah, pretty similar sentiment up here.
Well, the bottom line appeared, and I heard this expressed by a few people, is what exactly does the borough get in terms of a monetary influx? And the second thing which seemed to be pushed is this would at least demonstrate that the port is viable and is being used for something. And I think those answers are still coming. Mark, you have any questions?
Yeah, curious if there's any, you know, incremental growing sense of comfort with this. I know the first time it was brought up, there seemed to be a lot of alarm at the haste with which it was done and, you know, sole sourcing and all that. Do people seem to be a little more comfortable with it now?
Not that I'm hearing, and there really hasn't been that much time elapsed. I think had there been a decision made Tuesday night that there would be a major outcry. I think that the fact that the decision wasn't made and there are, you know, a little under 2 weeks now to get more information is calming some of that side of the concerns. But there's still, I mean, the borough is exempting this timber sale from various aspects of code, including some amendments they made last year to their, timber, the codes that would oversee timber harvest. And I do think that there are, Mayor Halter, Assembly Member Doty voiced continuing concerns about Charlie Nash's involvement. I don't know how they get around that because, you know, this sale is his. This timber is his unless they find somebody else somehow. I don't know procedurally how that would even be possible.
And they did speak, I think the mayor spoke specifically to the reality that he was probably the only person up there who had been serving back in the day when the previous timber harvest and lawsuit and all the rest were happening. Mm-hmm. He has had a long history, Planning Commission, Assembly, being mayor. And I also noticed that in the back of the room, of course, Mr. Arno, I saw someone back there who had been on the Assembly previously and appears to have had an interest in timber. And, of course, we had the gentleman, not only is New Zealand involved, but there was someone from New Zealand who was there speaking to the Assembly, which suggests a certainly commitment of some sort to the interest in this whole process.
And has a direct connection to Arvin been found yet?
I'm not aware of it, Zoss?
Not publicly.
Okay. But Mr. Arvin does, having spent the entire meeting there, I would suggest he's interested in some way. Well, let's move on, because that was one meeting, lasted 2 hours, and then there was followed by a joint meeting involving both the school board and the assembly, and the focus there was on a number, and the number was a choice of 6.25 or 6.5, as people are negotiating around what the school district needs. And then next, what the assembly feels that it can provide. Philip, do you have any perspective from Talkeetna on this discussion?
Well, folks I've talked to, and teachers and, among them, are all pretty excited about the prospect of a more predictable funding formula for schools from the borough, because you know, year on year between the borough and the state, there seems to always be this kind of mad rush at about this time of year to figure out exactly how much money there's going to be, you know, whether or not pink slips are going to go out, that sort of thing. And as far as 6.25 and 6.5, that really kind of depends on who you're talking to, I found. You know, parents and teachers would tend to be a little bit more inclined toward that. But at the same time, you know, all the schools in this area are Title I schools. And so if it results in an increase in property taxes, which may or may not eventually happen, depending on the other ordinance that's kind of paired with this one, then that could potentially impose a hardship or could, you know, cut a little bit further into borough services. So I think it kind of depends on where individual priorities lie. But as far as the predictability goes, I haven't heard too many folks up here upset about that.
Okay. Well, one of the, I thought, most useful parts of that second meeting was a presentation by two representatives from an association of financial officers across the country. And I was impressed because, having watched and listened as the school district provided a reasonable description with graphs and so on, the level went up a bit. And there was more detail and a more complete comparison of not only what was happening here, but in a broader sense, the general question of, for example, the borough's governing ordinances that are at work here. And they made some suggestions, which I thought the assembly listened to carefully, about tweaking and changing what they were doing for everyone's benefit to create either more predictability or more efficiency in the way funding passed from the assembly to the school district. And that was the first time, to my knowledge, they've been there. Zaz, did you get any of that?
I couldn't listen in on that session.
Okay. So you'll have to take my word for it. But I was impressed. And the issue for me was there was a large number of people at the regular assembly meeting, not so much at the joint meeting, which was at 4 o'clock in the afternoon. And then when the regular assembly meeting began and rolled along, there was discussion about the budget and the school funding and so on. There were a lot of people in the audience that stood up and made claims that I thought were perhaps not backed up entirely by facts. And the reality struck me is that if they had been at the earlier meeting and they had listened to that, they could speak to the specifics that were presented and perhaps have a number of criticisms or so on. But we would at least be talking about more than a soundbite that says, oh, the schools are bad and they're receiving too much money. And that kind of discussion, I'm not sure how it affects the assembly's actions, but it for me personally, as I observe it, I say, well, I'm not sure that's helpful. And so we'll see what happens, because once again, the decisions and actions and amendments and so on will be taken up at the next time, really on the 17th of April in that regard. Now, there's one other meeting that happened this week that I also attended. This was a week of meetings for me, and that was the school board meeting. And there was some business that was conducted, but one that was very interesting was a lengthy continuing discussion about whether the school board should be part of a statewide association called the Alaska Association of School Boards. And there's a price associated with that, roughly $22,000. And one of the school board members, Sarah Welton, is actually on, or had been on, the board of directors for AASB. But there had been questions raised about whether that should continue. A lot of focus on the money. Some discussion about the value of belonging to any association. Ultimately, the vote was taken and was 4-3 to not continue. And that I'm not sure whether that will once again come up at another time, because that association represents the majority of school districts and has been in the past a very significant player with representation down in Juneau to give district personnel, particularly school boards, a sense of what is happening and to coordinate efforts to focus on the broader legislations. Mark?
Yeah, so the $23,000, is that
right,
roughly?
Yep.
For that, we would essentially get the lobbying service?
Well, and that's one aspect of it. What happens is that AASB sponsors fly-ins to Juneau. And in full disclosure, when I had been a member of the school board, I had participated in 6 years' worth of those discussions, and I had actually served for 3 years on the association board of directors. So maybe I had an insider view. And my experience back in the day was that the first part, when I was a newbie, in the first year I was on the school board, the training that was provided for individuals was extraordinary. And then after that, following the training for school boards, the opportunity for school boards to have either an opportunity to contact people. I mentioned earlier the representatives from the Financial Association. Okay, they came in, and it was obvious that they had been focused on the broader shared issues that finance officers find and financial aspects have. And the same thing, I think, applies to an association of this sort. The other aspect that I discovered in the past was that when going down early in the session, those members of the school board that went down would get a pretty accurate assessment of what was happening, who the players were, what issues were there, et cetera. And what was done, an interesting way, is that the membership of the association would give direction to the executive director and the staff of AASB, which is headquartered in Juneau, about what to do. And then along through the session, you'd receive updates on this and an opportunity also to pick, for example, the question of base student funding, for example. You ask, well, how would an individual district affect that? They might be in contact with their local representatives, the legislature, and might have a lobbyist. But the reality that I found that when things were going to happen was when there was a win-win situation. And win-win says, you're not going to take something for one district and take it away from another. There's going to be some balancing that occurs. And after a while, you begin to realize, or at least I did, that these were that school boards had a shared experience, whether you were out in the bush or in Anchorage or in Sitka.
So how many other school boards are not involved? Is there a percentage?
I would say the majority of school districts in the state of Alaska are part of AASB. And that's a good question. I can't give you the specific answer at this point, but we're talking it's rare not to be participating. And, of course, the amount of money that's paid is graduated depending upon the size of the district. Anchorage pays far more. Some of the smaller districts far less because of their size and the ability to pay. But I invite comments, questions, Philip?
Well, it's not necessarily surprising to me that the price tag came up on that, because the school district has been facing a decent amount of criticism in some public meetings and online from budget hawks who are, you know, going through line by line and saying on the expenditures and saying, okay, why are we spending this money here? Why are we spending this money here when, you know, we know that it's going to be that the belt is tightening. Now, whether or not how much that played into it, I can't say for sure, but I know that criticism has been leveled, and it's a question of, okay, you know, where are those dollars best spent? I can't speak to the specifics of why they may or may not want to continue as part of the association, but that's what stuck out to me when you ran that down just a minute ago.
Yeah, and I think it was true observing the discussion. There were many, many comments made by the people that were there sitting in discussion. Well, let's see how it plays out, because one of the difficulties and you think about perhaps the associations that, whether you're a radio station or you are involved in any kind of work, there are different opinions about the value of associations and the cost that's associated in terms of what you get in terms of benefits in education, et cetera. Of course, there's the other aspect that is interesting to me, and that is how, if you're part of an association, if it's well designed, you have an opportunity to contribute to the association and to other members. If you have a great system going, sharing that with other districts improves everyone, and that tide raises all ships if you can do that. So I'm obviously speaking from a somewhat biased point of view, and I can identify it, that I value looking at associations carefully. I also support the effort to say, okay, are we doing everything we should be doing with this association? And that may be part of it. It may be that the district and the school board in particular did not work hard enough to make the questions that were raised be answered with that association. But we'll see what happens, because this can happen. They can drop away. Then they can find that, well, maybe there are some benefits that we are missing that we want to go back to. But since we're coming toward the end of our time, there are a couple of things that happened, and one of them I'm really very interested in, and that is the recent voting that happened in Anchorage. As many have already noted, this was record-breaking. 2012, I believe, had somewhere over 70,000 votes cast. At this point, we have over 80,000 votes. But more interestingly to me, there appeared to be the passage, although variably, all the bond issues, as well as the sale of Municipal Light and Power, as well as the election of someone who's arguably described as a progressive as mayor. I'm curious what the panel thinks about this as a harbinger for this coming fall. Let's start with Mark.
Very interesting thought. It's easy to jump to conclusions about a blue wave or a blue tsunami. Until it happens, I think caution is the wisest course here. And there's still, what do we got, 7-8 months till November, plenty of time for things to change. But it certainly does seem to bode well for that blue wave that seems to be talked a lot about in the media. And it surely fits in with how things have gone elsewhere in the country since the 2016 election.
How about you, Philip?
I would say, at least as far as the Valley goes, that it's possible that there might be a bit of a shift. But the Valley is a very different place from Anchorage, as we're all very well aware. And I think part of that too may have been the accessibility of the vote by mail that Anchorage did. And I don't know that I see that happening in the municipal elections up here necessarily, other than the places where it already does, remote areas, that sort of thing. As far as, statewide elections in November, it's living in a bit of what could be described as a blue island up here. Your perspective can be hard to get sometimes as far as, where the Valley as a whole goes, but I've heard it referenced many times that House District 10 is the reddest district in the state, and I don't necessarily see that changing right now.
Okay, Zaz?
Yeah, no, I agree with Philip. I don't know how much indication this has for Valley voters. I'm sure if Carrie were here, she might think otherwise. I think that it is interesting. It's not shocking. You know, I thought the success of all the bonds. I don't know what that bodes up here. I mean, there is a different sentiment up here in terms of paying for government services.
Exactly.
Oh, and in Eagle River Valley, apparently. Although that's a complicated issue. But I do wonder if Mark Begich is looking at those results. It'll be interesting to see the governor's race.
And then speaking of the governor's race, of course, there was the announcement of the legal action that said you may, Governor Walker, participate in the Democratic primary as an independent. That feels very powerful to me. Mark?
It is powerful, and it's interesting how it's been embraced by both parties. It was won on the premise that a party has a right to choose whom it affiliates with, which, you know, seems to make sense on its face. And that is how they say, let's bring independence into this. On the other side of the aisle, the party officials are rah-rahing this as well, because they have been very, very focused on getting rid of folks in their party who they deem, you know, not sufficiently Republican. So they say that this gives them the right to bar people like Paul Seaton from running as a Republican. So interesting.
So he could run as an independent?
I guess, yeah.
In that primary.
But it's interesting to me because one party is using it to expand who they include, while the other party seems to be more focused on using it to exclude people. Seems like a pretty dicey proposition for a party that, you know, currently has fewer than 25% of registered voters. But it should be very interesting to see how this all shakes out over the coming election cycles.
So, Philip, people who vote up in the Talkeetna area, are they more independent than people elsewhere here in the Valley?
I don't know. Compared to the Valley as a whole, if you look at the Talkeetna precinct itself, like I said, it tends to lean a little bit more blue. Now, as far as how many of those are registered Democrats, that's a little bit of a different story. But per capita, there are definitely more Democrats in the Talkeetna area than elsewhere in the Valley. Outside of that, you go to places like the Susitna Community Council, Trapper Creek, very strong, independent, little L libertarian streak, which I think kind of jibes with a lot of the Valley.
Okay. Well, folks, once again, we've come to that point where we've run out of time for this edition of Valley Edition. And I want to thank Philip Manning for taking the time to call down from Talkeetna. Thank you, Philip.
Pleasure as always, Mike.
And out of your very busy day today, Zaz Hollander, thank you for calling in.
Sure thing, Mike. Hopefully no more fires anywhere in Alaska.
Right. We didn't get to all of them, but the image that I have that's striking out of one of the reports is the police coming to a house where the individual within has not only a weapon, but is wearing body armor. Well, thank you, Mark, for making it safely here into the studio again today.
Always good to be here.
All right. And next week, we'll be back with another edition of Valley Edition.
You've been listening to Valley Edition, a weekly panel discussion on current issues in the Matsu Valley, moderated by Mike Malevsky. Valley Edition is a production of Radio Free Palmer, recorded at our studios in Palmer, Alaska. The views and opinions of hosts or guests do not necessarily represent those of Radio Free Palmer, this station, or its underwriters. If you have any comments or questions about this program, email manager@radiofreepalmer.org.